HD Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast. The weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hi guys, how's it going? Meet last week's HD Brunch cover star, Arman Jain, the entrepreneur who's launching Kitchen Tales, an all-vegetarian kitchen that aims at supplying fancy but wholesome Indian food at prices that don't cost heaven and earth. But what he's also offering is a taste from the kitchen of the Kapoor family, literally. For Arman belongs to the first family of films, being the son of Raj Kapoor's daughter and fourth child Reema and Manoj Jain. And the menu has one of Arman's own creations, the Truffle Dal Bukhara. Listen on as he talks about foodie arguments the first family of food has, their family lunches and his passion for food in conversation with me.
Hi Arman, welcome to the HD Brunch podcast and congratulations on your HD Brunch cover. So tell us, what have the reactions been like to the cover? How many messages, calls have you gotten from family talking about food, since Sunday? Has that happened?
Oh yes, thank you so much. Your cover does really well. So I'm very happy. And yeah, I mean, there's always excitement, right? When there's a new venture, your family comes and supports you, your friends come out there and support you. They have a few funny remarks to make as well. So it comes with a lot of fun. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it was a great article and well received. And I'm happy about it.
All right. And tell us a little about your passion for food. Where does it come from? I mean, do you have any memory of, as a kid, you know, the first thing you taste and you're like, wow, what is this?
So I don't have a physical memory of the kind of food I had, but I mean, as any youngster, you like your junk, you know, to begin with. You don't really understand too much in detail about food. So it's your pizzas and burgers and fries and all the common stuff that you want. And I'm a savory guy. I've always been like a junk food fried eater more than I don't have a sweet tooth. So it was mostly that. Also, I always had this curiosity about food growing up. Always. Didn't understand too much, but I was in the kitchen. I would eat in the kitchen. I would sit in the kitchen. Early age of 4 and 5, go to the market with my dad when I was 5 and 6. He would take us there, teach us how to pick up meat. And I mean, certain days we didn't want to go because it would smell bad, but he would tempt us with packets of chips. So we would go there. I remember like observing my nani and dadi both cook in the kitchen. And that's where it all started. You know, I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with them, with my dad on holidays when we would travel, cook together. So that's where it all started in terms of curiosity. I didn't understand too much, but then as I grew, obviously, I started cooking myself and then taking a deeper interest and trying multiple cuisines.
So what was the first thing you made?
First thing I made, I think Maggi. Maggi was the easiest thing to make. So I think Maggi would probably be the first thing in school days or something to make. Plus, obviously, I studied in London. So for me, I would just like hoard those packets of Maggi and take them there and make. But my earliest memories of, I think it's Maggi, definitely.
Maggi, all right. And tell us about the Kapoor family's love for food. What are some of the big food arguments that you've witnessed over the years?
See, it's very generic. I mean, everyone has their favorite restaurant around the world or in India or in Mumbai. So, firstly, when we get together, and especially among the Kapoor family, like the adda or the home of food was always our Chembur home, my nani and nana's bungalow. Devan cottage. So we would get together very often there. And see, again, early memories, let's go back to my early memories of food, was this staple machhi curry and rice. So every time I went there, I would have that rice with ghee and nice fish curry. And that was always my favorite thing growing up. Often people would say, you know, I mean, my nani was very encouraging, pleasing, but with me, people had to say, please don't eat, because I was a really chubby kid and I would just keep on eating. So, I mean, yeah, talking about arguments, for me personally, it was my family stopping me from eating more because I thought I'll explode. So that was my personal experience. But just generally, I remember it was always about everyone's preference, everyone having this really a passionate view on food. Someone preferring something to the other, someone saying, no, this is not nice, this is good. So, I mean, just healthy, fun arguments. Mm-hmm. And because our family do have deep, heavy, loud voices, it was always commotion at home. But that was like, for me, it was the best time ever seeing guys fight over food, you know. And I always had a strong opinion growing up. The only thing I could actually argue about was food, because I always had an opinion.
Yeah.
If it was something else, okay, I would keep quiet. But if it was food, I always had something to say, even when I was a baby. So it was fun. It was fun.
Amazing. All right. And, you know, tell us about your food venture. And, you know, why you think this is the right time to kind of go ahead and get into this space?
Yeah, so I believe where this all started, of course, I mean, it took a while for me to realize that, okay, this is something I'm so passionate about that I want to take ahead. But see, food was always a passion. So it was a hobby, whether it was cooking or whether it was going to restaurants and eating and stuff. It was always a hobby. In this lockdown, we got so much time to really reflect and think about, you know, the things that make you happy. So organically, I mean, the whole world started cooking in this pandemic. People discovered their inner abilities. So I think I'm one of those who actually discovered that I could cook quite a lot. Although I've been cooking since I was 12, mm-hmm, I could really cook. It comes to me naturally. But cooking is one thing. That's a passion and that's a hobby for me now. I wanted to always do something with the food biz. So with the cloud kitchen space growing, also with India is a price sensitive market in general, especially with food. I wanted to really do something for people at a larger level. I wanted to give them good quality food at a good price. Like, for example, I created this truffle dal bukhara. I have a couple of truffle things on the menu, not typical truffle dal, it's more smoked truffle stuff. Mm. Just, I want people to really try it. Every menu out there are inaffordable to the common man, you know, when it comes to your truffle items or certain items. So our menu is very price sensitive. And a person who's passionate about food wants to just feed everyone. That's the way I've been. I've always wanted to feed the whole world, you know. So, it was an opportunity. And I caught onto this opportunity to start with veg food. So I'm doing this right now. But sky is the limit. I hope to grow from here and keep discovering, learning along the way, learn from my mistakes. And all I can say is I'm in a happy space. I'm in a comfortable space. And this makes me happy. Yeah.
That's lovely. That's perfect. But I have to ask, what's the secret of your truffle dal bukhara? I mean, there has to be something.
There's no secret. Typically, a dal bukhara has a lot of butter, a lot of cream. It has a subtle sweetness to it. Not a sweetness, but a tang of sweetness to it. But the thing is, see, I've eaten a lot of good dal bukhara all around the world. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever tried a truffle dal bukhara. That was just experimental. I want to experiment with smoke, with truffle. But if you put too much truffle into it and you infuse too much truffle, it kills the flavor of the dal and the butter and the cream. It has to really balance well. So mine is very different from the typical dal bukharas there, because number one, the truffle and the smoke. So yeah. I kind of found this balance while experimenting. So it just worked out organically. And with God's grace, people are receiving it very well. So I'm happy.
All right. And what other signature dishes do you kind of have that are not on the menu, but are popular with family and friends?
See, my family are very big non-veg eaters. I mean, we appreciate our veg as well. They're very big meat eaters and seafood eaters. So I mean, I cook a lot of stuff myself. I make a lot of which I do see a lack of. I don't see too many restaurants or kitchens here in Mumbai making like your typical lal mas, your shikari chakri mas, which is from back in the day in Rajasthan. A good paya. Of course, you do get paya, but your mutton yakni pulao. Fish curry, keema chops. Oh, I make a lot of these things. But I do cook a lot of veg as well. And I do eventually do want to start a separate kitchen for non-veg. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of veg friends and I do realize, like right now when I'm doing this veg thing, I didn't want to... a lot of people ask me, why aren't you doing non-veg? Why doesn't this have any non-veg in it? I'm actually, that's what I said at the beginning. I get slack because I'm known to have, or our family's known to have good non-veg food.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people who find non-veg on the menus or the same kitchen, even if it's cooked separately. They have that inhibition of eating there. So again, like I said, I don't want my clientele to be upset. Mm. I want them to be happy, comfortable. So this is a separate veg kitchen. Tomorrow, God willing, we grow. We have a separate non-veg kitchen. That's where I'm at. Yeah.
All right. But I'm sure, you know, there are some vegetables that even you don't like. Like, you know, I can't stand broccoli. I don't know why. So are you a picky eater? Is there something that's, you know, that you don't like?
I was. So, you know, let me start here. So basically, like I said, transitioning from the junk days to like really understanding food. A lot of people ask me, so when do you really understand the sushis and the different kind of food that growing up? It took me a while. I was one of those really fussy guys who would be like, okay, I like my comfort cooked food, especially Indian. But then slowly with time, for example, all my friends are like, hey, try sushi. It's the in thing. It's the in thing. And I'm like, no, that just looks not too good. But it took me 3 years for it. So every time I had an inhibition about food or vegetables, I started loving it. So I love sushi today. I love every single vegetable. Every single vegetable. It took me time. So even till today, like I didn't have bengal till 2 years ago. And I love bengal bhartha now, for example. So I love my veggies, broccoli. So the only one thing, I love my broccoli, but eggs and broccoli, because it was a staple part of my diet, and like grilled chicken and stuff. For me, it is not comfort. It is more like, oh my God, I'm on a diet. So for me, it's kind of like this mental block with broccoli and eggs and chicken, because that was part of my routine for such a long time.
Okay.
But I don't mind it. It's great. If I have it up like 2 months, great. If I eat it every day, yeah, it drives me crazy. But yeah.
Okay. And what's the weirdest thing you've eaten?
Weirdest? That's really a good one. Weirdest thing I've eaten. Okay, so I'm not really the fancy guy. Everyone talks very highly of caviar and stuff. So caviar wasn't weird, but caviar was like, okay, you know, I mean, I'm not a really big fan of like molecular food and like small bites. For me, I'm like that Punjabi eater, you know, if something small comes to me, I like it, whether it takes me another 1 hour to order the same dish, you know. So it's not weird, but like, I can't find a weird thing, but I don't like small portions.
Yes. Yes.
I don't like cold cuts either. I don't really like cold cuts. Hmm. So like cold meats and stuff. I mean, I'm okay in a sandwich here and there, but I'm not like really a cold cut eater.
Okay. All right. And would you rather go to like a you know, fancy, not a fancy, but like a fine dine restaurant? Would you rather go to, let's say, a small hole in the wall that somebody recommended to you maybe 2 years ago and you came across it and doesn't look that great, but you've heard good stuff about it? So, you know, which would you pick?
Definitely a hole in the wall. For me, I appreciate all kinds of food. For me, it's not the aesthetic of the restaurant. It's not the presentation of food again. And I know as someone who's starting off, it's very important to present your food well, yes. But for me, it's purely the taste. It's the, yes, people say the experience comes with the whole, you know, decor and the restaurant and the vibe. Yeah, I love great restaurants. I love great bars. I love it. But for me, when it comes to food purely, I don't care about anything but that meal in front of me. And I said this before, I piss my friends off when I go out for dinners. I only talk to them on the drive there, on the drive back. Because when I'm in a restaurant, I'm only looking and concentrating on my food. So yeah, I mean, it's not about people recommending. I discover myself. I go to different places alone myself to like find good food, you know. So from like your modern dhabas in Sion to Chicken Center, which is here in Grant Road, to a lot of other places. I love discovering new places and new places all over the world, in fact. And I feel the food tastes better in most of your hole in the walls around the world. So I appreciate that. And I don't get a bad stomach, so I'm very happy.
Oh, okay. That's handy. All right. And lastly, you know, I have to ask, since you're, you know, in Bombay and we're in India, Delhi versus Bombay, in terms of food, which city would you pick?
So see, I'm a Mumbai, you know, so for me, it always is the Delhi-Bombay fight, you know, when it comes to food or it comes to cricket. I'm a big cricket buff as well. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to pick. But see, I'm a Bombay guy. I love my Bombay. But I know, like, I know with Delhi, certain restaurants are better. Your kebabs are better. Your dhaba chicken curries are better. A lot of hole in the walls there. Yeah, there are a lot of options. Your North Indian is definitely better. But I mean, and here in Bombay, you have a different, diverse kind of... your food is more diverse here. It's always a tough fight. But being a Bombayite, I stick to Mumbai.
All right. On that note, thank you so much for your time, Armand. It was really nice talking to you. And congratulations once again on the HT Branch cover.
The best burgers I've had during the lockdown have been homemade. I ordered in pork chorizo patties from the Slice of Pink, soft burger buns, put in some olives, caramelized onions, cheese, some mayonnaise and a dash of mustard and chili sauce. And my burger was ready in about 15 minutes. The flavors were spot on thanks to the well-balanced patty, but I did miss the ease of just ordering one in for a quick meal. Why didn't I do that? Well, because the bun always gets soggy when you order in, and it just doesn't taste the same. Of course, one can order in a McDonald's and not feel the pinch as much because you haven't splurged on it, but even that doesn't taste the same. So it's a DIY for me till I feel up for eating at restaurants, as long as it comes to burgers and maybe even pizzas to an extent. But here's what HT Brunch columnist Veer Sanghvi has to say about takeaway burgers.
You know, burgers get a really bad rap. Most of us go to, say, McDonald's or one of those fast food places. The guy who makes it, you can tell, is not a chef. He gives it to you and you think, hey, there can't be so much to it, right? It's easy to do. Actually, it's not easy to do. The way the guy makes it is not his own innovation. It's a process that's been worked out and perfected over decades. But when you go to a restaurant that makes an actual burger, it's even more complicated. These are the things you consider. When you make the patty, how do you make it? Do you make it from goat, from lamb, from buffalo? If you do make it from any of those, do you put fat in it? Do you not put fat in it? If you put fat, how much fat do you put? When you make the buns, do you make a brioche bun, which is a really fancy bun? Or do you make a bun that's not so fancy but will last? Because all too often, you know the feeling, you order a great burger, you go home, you open it 20 minutes later, and it looks right from the top, but the bottom is completely soggy. So what kind of bun do you make? What sauce do you put on it? Do you put coleslaw? Do you put ketchup? Do you put mustard? Do you put mayonnaise? Does it make a difference? So I've been talking to all the guys who make some of India's best burgers, not just the fast food variety. And I've been discovering what their secrets are. And this week's Root Food is about the construction of the burger. It's not quite the construction of the Taj Mahal, but by God, it comes close.
Growing up, I was more of a football fan. It started with my parents and favorite uncle who used to stay up and watch the World Cup during summer break. And then I discovered Real Madrid, developed a massive crush on Raul Gonzalez and swore my allegiance to the team. At one point, they had them all. Beckham, Zidane, Figo, Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos, and they were unbeatable, especially with goalkeeper Casillas as captain. Then came the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, Ramos, and Kaka. I remember staying back in office after work to catch the 12:30 a.m. matches with the sports section complete with pre-ordered kebabs. And then at some point, I stopped following the sport as religiously. But during the lockdown, I got reacquainted with the team. This time more out of nostalgia than love for the sport, I admit. Here's what HT Brunch columnist Rehana Munir has to say about looking at a team that you once loved.
I don't really count myself among those who glean life lessons from great sporting triumphs. But I think this India's tour of Australia this last December and January, it's completely upended my notions of what this cricket squad is all about. For long, you know, I've been a lapsed cricket fan. I have no interest in T20 cricket. I find it to be full of empty noise. I find 50 overs cricket to be very dull. And test cricket, you know, mostly it's competitions that don't interest me. But this you know, it's what we call cognitive dissonance. It's something that you believe about something or a strongly held belief gets completely challenged by a certain turn of events. And I always thought this of this squad as Kohli and Shastri's brash, rowdy, you know, instant cricket guys. But yeah, they've come out with a rather characterful performance, and now I'm forced to relook at what I think about it all, because it was just completely riveting and I was transfixed to all the days of each of the tests. Of course, it all began with the big question around Kohli's paternity leave. I don't think people would have been that interested even in paternity tests if it involved them. So somehow it became a national obsession. Of course, as luck would have it, he ended up missing a very historic, momentous win. And for all the hyperbole and all the kind of overstatement that goes around in sports, I genuinely felt moved by this performance. I felt like I needed to now kind of... I liked cricket unironically after a very long time, and I was fine about it. It was cool to be supporting these boys, and I think this week's column takes off from that, a very pure and happy idea of following a team that you once loved and now you're suddenly forced to look at again. And I hope it resonates with your thoughts. Bye.
She's versatile, has an envious range, and is unarguably one of the most creative millennial vocalists in the indie scene at the moment. I'm talking about Delhi NCR-based singer-songwriter Taisha Kohli, who is currently attending a course in Berklee College of Music in Boston, but from her home, given the pandemic. And thankfully for us, this has only given her more time to experiment with her music. She's collaborated with a bunch of people, including Sone De with Mojo Jojo, and her Instagram is the place to be if you want to listen to beautiful covers and improvisational original snippets. We got her to do a cover of Crazy by American soul duo Gnarls Barkley. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello everyone, my name is Taisha Kohli and I will be singing Crazy by Gnarls Barkley for you today. It's a little different than the original, but I really hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. When you out there without a care, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Possibly. And I hope that you are having the time of your life. But think twice, that's my only advice. Come on now, who do you think you are? Oh, bless your soul. You really think you're in control? I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. Just like me. My heroes had the heart to lose their lives out on a limb. But all I remember no coincidence I've come. I can die when I'm young. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that mean I'm crazy? Possibly.
Well, thanks for tuning in, guys. This was Crazy by Niles Barkley, and we hope you enjoyed it and the rest of the show as well. From all of us here, have a happy, happy weekend brunch.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.